Music industry secrets. Music industry secrets. Music industry secrets. Spilled.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Music Industry Secrets Spilled with me, your host, Lucy May Walker. Today we are joined by one of my support acts for my UK tour. She is actually opening for my London show on the 6th of April at the Victoria in Dalston, and she is called Daisy Veacock. In this episode, we talk about Daisy's career so far, how she started off at the Brit School, she supported Jules Holland, and the importance of TikTok and how that's helped her with her music. Daisy is a relatively new artist, but she's achieved so much already, and I think she has a very wise music industry head on her shoulders. So definitely one to watch. So here it is, Music Industry Secrets Spilled with special guest Daisy Veacock. Daisy Veacock, welcome to Music Industry Secrets
Thanks
Spilled.
For having me.
You're welcome. So we know each other through the fact that you are supporting me very, very soon, which we'll get on to. But I want to start at this kind of start of your career.
Yeah.
So from the age of 16 to 18, which makes me feel so old, you studied at the Brit School.
Yes.
And for anyone listening, the Brit School, you'll probably have heard of it. Adele went there, Amy Winehouse, lots of people. I've not heard of Brit School for ages.
Really?
So how was it for you? Yeah, I just feel like it used to be like a really big thing that everyone used to.
I sort of do know what you mean. I feel like there's been like, you'd be amazed how many people you sort of didn't really know went to Brit. So people like Olivia Dean and like Ray was a big one recently. I don't know. I loved it. Personally, I loved it. You'll get a lot of people that would be like, it was so intense. And like, it is exactly how you would imagine Brit School to be. Like, it's just like your life is an episode of Glee for 2 years. Straight up.
Right. And I love that because I was like a musical theatre kind of person. Did you study music? Is that
I
right?
did music, not musical theatre. Musical theatre would have killed me. It's just so like, bah, 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 bah. And I was like, oh my God, like, you guys chill out. It's okay. It's 8 a.m. We're on the train. Like, chill. No, it would finish me. But it's just, it was so fun. Like, it was so fun. And although it was hit by the pandemic, like, you know, we pulled our way through. And I met some, like, incredible people from being there. And, you know, I didn't get the same opportunities I probably would have got if I hadn't been hit by the pandemic. But it, you know, the facilities and the kind of sort of just push for you to kind of write and be creative and being in a creative space more than anything else. It's like, it just, oh, it's just such a great feeling. I miss being at school. Like being at school and being surrounded by people just dancing all the time is so great. It's so fun.
So you kind of talked then about the pandemic hit. So it hit whilst you were there. So what happened then? Did you still get to go or did you have to like do it online? Or
we did. So I did a music performance course online, which was
no way.
Pretty much. It was like the first few months were just, they were hard because no one had ever been online before. No one had ever had to, and especially like a performance course, how are you supposed to do that online? So there was a lot of songwriting, which was amazing for me because I love songwriting and it's what I was good at. But there wasn't, you know, there wasn't kind of opportunities of kind of being like, you know, there was one opportunity we're supposed to have where we performed in the Apple Store in Covent Garden, which would have been so cool, but we didn't get to do it because of COVID and just so many things like that. But I think I still got a lot out of it. And I also weirdly think that the pandemic brought us closer together because we were all struggling with it and we all had to actually kind of commit to calling each other. And we'd only known each other like 5 months at this point. Like none of us really had sort of, because it was the first year of sick form. So we'd sort of made friends, but we weren't besties. We weren't like bestie boos, loving it up. Like we were just kind of a bit like, do you want to be friends with me? Like, when you're in a group together or something like that, but, you know, muddled through.
Nice. So you said about, like, meeting lots of people, and you also met your now producer, Bo Miles, on the train?
Yeah,
is
lovely
that right?
Bo.
What?
It was so we met on the train because that was kind of where the friendships started, especially at Brit, because everyone came from miles away. So it's in Croydon. And I live kind of other end of southeast, so it was like a kind of nightmare getting back and forth. Because you'd have to go into central London and then back out again.
Oh, and Bo, so annoying.
I know. Bo grew up in Kent. Bo was living at his grandma's. He was going back and forth from Islington every day. I had a friend, my friend Ellie was living, she was living in Bournemouth. And she would come up and stay in Harpenden with her uncle and her auntie during the week and then go back down to Bournemouth in the... Wow. It was nuts. So there was a lot of bonding on the train.
I bet she was thrilled when it went online then.
She was just like, yeah, cool. Yeah. And living it up by the beach, because it was that really hot like summer as well during lockdown. Yeah. She was just sort of lying about sort of on her roof sunbathing, and we were all like, oh, we want to be at Bournemouth.
So how did that conversation with Bo start? He went to Brit School as well, or?
So he was studying music technology, which is the kind of techie side. And the first conversation we had, it is quite a funny story. So we were sort of sat on the train with like a load of friends, and he was like, oh, I listened to your music, because I had like two really terrible SoundCloud demos that I put out, because I was just like, I don't know, here, I made these. He came up to me and he was like, I listened to the demos, and I went, oh, did you? And he went, great songs, man. Like, oh my God, wow. And I was like, yeah, cool. And he went, yeah, they sound terrible though.
Oh no.
And I went, what? And he went, yeah, like, do you not have Logic? These are all the garage band, like, so. And I was going, what's Logic? I don't know what that is. Like, I was just sort of like, and he went, oh, you know, I can help you with that. And then just like show me all this stuff. And we just bonded, you know. And you know, there was constant like trains would sort of stop somewhere, I'd be sat on the train for like an hour and a half, and like we just got on and sort of started creating stuff. And then I sent him some ooze that he made into a synthesizer, and then he basically made this whole track out of just me going ooh, like in different notes. And he sent it back to me, and I thought he wanted me to write something to it, but he was just sending it to kind of show what it sounded like. So I then just wrote this song to what he sent me, and it became the first thing we ever did together, which is this track called From This Height, which is on my Spotify and stuff like that. And it's just so crazy listening to it now from that first kind of few train journeys where we were just sending stuff back and forth for a laugh, you know, like,
nice.
And then slowly I kind of went, here are my songs. And he just sort of, you know, worked on them with me, and we're still like best friends.
That's amazing. I can't remember what episode it was where I was talking about finding the right it was with George Pelham. We were just saying how it's so hard to find the right producer, and when you have them, you gotta hold on to them.
You really do. I'm sort of like, it's Bo, and it's like
mine.
And he works with so many other friends of mine, but I know that we will always work together, which is so nice.
I feel like that with my producers as well. It's like sometimes they know what I want before I know what I want,
and I'm so like, helpful, and it saves so much time and energy. And you know, it's great. I really love that it's just there, and it always has been, and I don't feel like I'm gonna worry about losing that as much as the industry seems so scary. I'll always have Bo, which is so nice.
Wholesome content. So you released your first single in 2020.
Yeah, I released It Wouldn't Be Fair.
And was that, so you were at Brit School at that time, was that part of like your course, or you just did it off the back of your own back?
I think like it was probably inspired by something that's happening on the course, but I wrote it in June of 2020, and It was one of those songs that, like, you know when a song just completely falls out of you?
Yes.
And it was just,
it
like...
It doesn't happen very often.
And they just... It just went... And I was like, oh, okay, I like this. And I basically just kind of sat and did it and just recorded it, did it, went, oh, I really like this. And I sent it to Bo, and he, like, sort of did stuff. I added the clarinet, which my dad plays.
Nice, shout out to your dad.
Shout out to Phil. He did the clarinet, and to be fair, I remember before I put this song out, I sent it to the boy it's about like a week before, which because it was like it was one of those breakups where we broke up like sort of because loads of stuff because of the pandemic starting, and then we got back together like months after. So when this song released, I was with the boy it's about.
Oh.
But he told me he really loved the song and he was never kind of mad about it.
That's the kind of secret we like on music. I know,
that's a little music industry secret for you.
So that was part of your first EP, Lockdown Loser. Oh my god, yeah,
the EP, Lockdown Loser.
So creating an EP and putting that out is like a big kind of thing. Did you plan that or did it kind of just happen? What was the plan?
So we basically, Brit half terms worked really weirdly. So I had 3 weeks off and everyone was still at school. And I had my half term in February. So I'd been off for 3 weeks. I went back to school for like one day and they went, okay, bye guys. You're going home. Lockdown. Done. That's it. Yeah, and we were all like, okay. And so I remember leaving school that day being like, this is gonna go on for, like, because everyone was like, 2 weeks we done, and I was like, this is going on for months, this is not good.
Oh, she knew.
I did just kind of get that sense that I was like, I'm gonna be in my house for a long time. And I remember walking out the school gates and being like, I just had this idea of being like, because I was like, oh, I'm gonna be such a lockdown loser. And then I went, oh, I kind of like that. And in that moment I was like, I'm gonna write an EP. And I don't think I ever thought I was gonna like release it or do anything with it, or like I was just like, I've got all this time, I've never written an EP or an album or anything like that before, I'll just write it. And then it, you know, I kept writing these songs, and there was like the first version of the EP is five completely different songs, like completely different songs that I don't think anyone will ever hear. But I just, they kept coming together. And I remember when I first wrote Lockdown Loser, I just sat and played the bass line and I was like, oh, I kind of like this. And it all, I started recording it because I had the time to do it. And just bit by bit, I started putting loads of work into it. Then I showed it to Bo, and Bo started putting loads of work into it. And then my dad did all the brass recordings. And then I, as soon as we could like get into any studio of any sorts, we got my drummer on it and then my bass player. And it became this really big thing. And I was like, oh, I can't not release this now. So we put it out, and I maybe wouldn't put it out now because it's like, it's so of its time, but I also love that. I love that it's so kind of like, it was recorded over FaceTime. Like, it was done on FaceTime, that whole
EP. That's amazing.
And also, I would not trade the release party for anything. That was the best night of my life, and I maintain that.
What did you do?
We did a gig, and I was working with this, they've shut down now, which is so sad. It was this like lovely little venue in kind of, it's like Clapton way, like East London. And it was called Lion Coffee Records. And it was so lovely. It's a tiny, teeny record shop in sort of East London. And it's run by this lovely guy called Jim, or was run by this lovely guy called Jim. It's shut down now. I'm so sad about it. I played, my friend BB played, and my friend Natsuma played it, who is also opening for Lucy when we open in London. And I played the EP, and I just played it from the start to the finish, and I talked about each song. And it was just every single one of my friends and everyone that had played on the EP and everyone that had been part of it. And it was such a kind of momentous moment. And it was so... It was just so exciting because it's the first time I was like, you know, all my friends are here and they're like, it was really exciting. And it was one of the best nights of my life. It was so fun.
Oh, nice. Oh, I love that story. So this is something I did not know, because I asked you, I was like, can you just send me stuff that I wouldn't find on the internet? Although I did find this afterwards when I stalked you, but you supported Jules Holland.
Yeah, that was what? Like pretty... That was one of those things I was like, who's trusted me with this? I'm 18. Like, who's let me do this?
How did that happen?
Okay, so to be fair, this is one of those things that might make some people quite cross, because this is the sort of thing that I get cross about, because this is my one little nepotism link. And I'm telling you, if you have any nepotism link at all, milk it. Milk it. And it will make everyone else cross because, you know, like even I get furious about it. I'm like, oh, it's all about who you know. It's like not about
it. It is.
But you, like, if you're in that position, you've got to use it. You've got to milk it. So my dad is in Jules's band. He plays saxophone in the Rivermen Blues Orchestra. And I was kind of just getting all cross. I was like, I'm not, you know, pandemic and I've not done any gigs for ages. And he went, oh, well, you know, hopefully this winter tour is going to happen. I'll mention your name as a support act. And I was like, yes. I was like, yes, yes, yes. And then that was kind of the extent of what my dad did. Because he then just gave me an email. And then I had to kind of pester them every single day. Like, please, can I be a support act? And they were like, you're just this like we know your dad's in the band, but like you're just this random 18-year-old like, And so I had to record all these like really good demos. And send it over to the tour team and Jules's manager and stuff like that. And then they listened to the demos and they went, okay, here's two dates. And I went,
nice.
And then I was really tricky and I was like, okay, right, I'm bringing my whole band. We're all going to be there. We're all going to, my best friend, Joni, took on role as tour manager.
Nice.
And she kind of helped me plan it, and it was like a complete logistical nightmare, the whole thing, getting drum kits, getting basses, getting everything everywhere. And we played in Guildford and we played in Bath, and it was so much fun. It was so much fun. And then they had us back a second year, which was really
amazing.
Great. And we did some more the second year, which was just like it was amazing.
So when you got, did you get asked back or did you do the pestering? Because I'm a big pesterer.
I did pester, but in a kind of like, it was just so nice being able to play. It's really helped me like grow as like I'm like a really young independent artist. Like it's really boosted my career. And they were like, okay, you can come back. I was like, yes.
So you must have done something right.
I hope so. I really hope so. Because I mean, like, as much as the Jules's audience maybe isn't my main demographic because it's a lot older than the audiences I'd normally be like sort of angling towards and playing to, that I was received really well. Like I'd still get added to like lots of playlists that are kind of like Jules Holland, and like my music is linked to his on Spotify, and I find that really nice. It's so nice having a different demographic of listeners, and that it appeals as well.
There's something to say, so like with that demographic, I supported Wet 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 on their tour, and I mean, very different to Jules Holland, but like same kind of era, I guess. And the audience, you know, I don't know, 60-ish,
like sort of older.
But the thing is, maybe artists or the industry might look at you and be like, oh, that's you know, it's not as cool as getting like 16-year-olds to like your music. But actually, there's something to say about they buy merch and they will
and
buy
they
to your
listen
show.
As well. They listen and they and also if your music is appealing to a wider range, if it's not just like 16-year-olds are listening to this, if 16-year-olds and 60-year-olds are listening to it, you must be doing something right. Like, you know, come on, everyone wants to listen to it. And that's that was what I kind of took away from those shows, that's what I felt kind of most happy about. That I was like, it's not just like these 16-year-olds that want to listen to my music. It's like, you know, it's older people as well, which is great.
I've done gigs with people before where they've had a kind of younger fan base, and I would be like, oh, how do you get this younger fan base? Me trying to get to them. They were like, well, the thing is, you come to my gigs, I might have convinced them to come, but they won't buy merch. They'll spend the whole time, this is really generalizing, but like a lot of them will spend the whole time like videoing. And the fact that when you play a show and they just listen,
it's like, so delicious. You're like, listen, thank you. Oh,
it
man,
it should be the bare minimum.
I know,
but
it's know.
Difficult.
Sorry. Oh, I played one like played a gig a couple nights ago, and I've had a lot of kind of trying gigs recently. I've played a few kind of like really working the crowd shows, but I played one a couple nights ago at the Gladstone Arms in London Bridge. Oh my god, that audience was so polite.
Good.
They just sat and they were just like, and I was like, oh, this is, it's just, and it's so nice for the person that's performing to just be like, I can just play and I don't have to be like, like worrying about the next thing or engaging them, and just like playing and the music speaking for itself is just so nice.
I really hope that we're going to about to talk about this anyway. So you're supporting me next Thursday at the Victoria in Dalston. And I really, really hope most of the time, I'm putting my fingers crossed, my audiences are wonderful and
I trust
so supportive.
Them. I trust them.
To the support act. So I think it's going to be good.
I've got some lovely messages from your listeners on Instagram and stuff already.
Oh, really?
Which is really, like, it's made me feel really kind of like, because I was a bit like, oh my God, how is like, because it's like, when you're supporting someone, it's always quite a big pressure because it's like you're not the person they're going to see. You're just like, you're just kind of, hello, listen to my music as well, maybe, please, thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
And like, so I've got some like really lovely messages from people being like, oh, I've just seen you on Lucy's post and I think you're really cool and I really like, oh. I'm really excited. And I'm like, yeah, me too. Like, this is really
that's
exciting.
So nice. I know. That's so nice. Yay. So talking of that, The reason why we know each other is, well, this is actually first time meeting, but you applied to support me on my UK tour. So for those who don't know, I did an almost like a competition, but I don't really like to call it that, for people that would like to open my shows for me. So I'm doing a 6-date tour. And all I asked was for artists to send in like a 30-second clip of them performing an original song live, which you did. Now, your video, I don't want to put anyone else down. However, when your video popped up, I was like, instantly, I was like, well, obviously she's got the job. Because you just like, right. I did a little video on your, about yeah. your application. But what you did was you introduced yourself. You complimented me, which always makes me feel great. And then you said why you want to support me. And then you told me a little bit about the song. And then you played the song so beautifully and I was like, she's perfect. How did you know how to do the perfect application?
I don't know, man. I was blagging it. Like, I just was like, I saw the video and then I think I filmed it like 5 minutes after seeing it. I just went, cool. Okay. Like, because I'm so about like, I'm so about kind of making connections and networking with other kind of people in like the community that I'm in, because it's so important to me, like sort of just making, because the more connections you have, the more you're going to uplift yourself and others. Yeah. And I saw it and I went, cool, that looks great, why not, I'll do that, like I'm about that date, like, you know, I'll just, and then I basically was just like, oh, okay, hello, my name is Daisy, because you don't know who I am. And then I was yeah. like, okay, I'll just find some common ground. Because we're both independent artists,
mm-hmm.
we both live in London, and we're both like, yeah. you know, both sort of trying to kind of make the same sort of steps. Because it's like, you know, when you're in India, you're just like, you are kind of blagging it a little bit. You're just kind of like,
oh yeah,
you're just like, oh, so I'm doing this. It's really cool, and everyone's like, oh, she's planned that for ages, and you're like, no, I woke up this morning and I went, that's what I'm doing today.
Well, the thing is, you, even though you said you did it like 5 minutes afterwards, you put a little bit of thought in. So let yeah. me just talk you through some of the applications that I got.
Yeah.
So first of all, I posted the video of like, here's what to do. And I had some applications come through within like 5 minutes of that.
Oh my God, wow. But people were like on it. They were ready. They knew you were doing that.
Yeah. And I was like, whoa, that was fast. But then you look on the video and they've just like posted like a really old video, put no thought into it. So like for me, if I was applying, it's really cool to do it because I've applied for kind of these kind of things before myself. And maybe you don't really think about it the way that you should, but it was interesting on the other kind of perspective, because for me it was like, oh, all you have to do, a 30-second clip of you performing an original song live. If that was me, I would do exactly what you did, have a little chat, yeah, and make the video specifically for the application,
yeah.
rather than posting a really old video. Or some people like didn't follow the instructions, they would just like tag me in a comment of like a video they posted 5 years ago,
yeah.
And there was, what else? Oh yeah, people like wouldn't follow me. So like they applied,
oh,
but like wouldn't follow me. I'm like, Come on.
Oh, dude. No, that's not on. Come on. You got to follow the person you're applying to open for on top.
Right?
Jesus. Oh, my God.
Because that just screams to me, you just want this.
Yeah, and you're not passionate about the music as well.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You got to show an interest in, like, the music. You can't just be like, right, give me a platform. It's like, because I really hate when people message me and they go, can I open for you at a gig? And I'm like, I don't know who you are. You've never shown up to watch me play. How do you even know you want to open for me on tour? If you haven't seen me live, how do you, like, or if you haven't followed me at the bare minimum,
I find it
so crazy. I'm like, no.
But that's exactly how I feel. Like, again, I get messages from artists saying the same thing, like, can I
open for me? And you're like, no.
Right.
And but not even in a kind of like, they might be the most amazing person going, but if, like, you need to put the groundwork in, man. I always say this to people that message me, like, you've got to do the grind. Like, I spend like 3 or 4 nights a week going to, like, live gigs. And if you're showing up and supporting other people and giving back to the community that you're part of, the opportunity is just going to come. Like, they'll come to you. You don't have to be kind of like, please, can I open for you on tour? And you're like,
No. I mean, these are great tips. Yes. Let's talk about what things to do. Because I got a message even, oh God, I could talk about this for so long. So I announced all of the support acts, right? The day after, I get messages, hey, Lucy, I see you playing in Birmingham. Can I support you? And I'm like, well, first of all, I've literally
just...
You're
months late, babes.
Yeah, I've ran a competition for like a month and a half. Where were you? Also, just like, take 1 second to look on my profile that I've already announced it. I've also said that it's a whole all women lineup and you are a man. Like, just, you know...
It's always the men.
Not all men, but it is always men. Yeah, so things to do, I guess, because you're also supporting Gekko, I don't know if you know this, but he supported me at my last London show.
No way! Yeah. Oh, that's crazy.
Small Will. So how did that one happen?
See, I've never actually met Will before, but I know that Will's followed me. I think he must have seen like a TikTok that I posted a while ago, because he's followed me for a while and has always kind of, like, I sort of hadn't realised until he sort of messaged me, but I was suddenly like, oh, I recognise you, because you retweet my stuff and you kind of comment on my posts and stuff, and I was suddenly like, oh, follow back, like, yes, I want to open for you, you're really cool. And it's like, it's one of those things I was kind of subconsciously aware of but hadn't quite kind of picked up on until he reached out. And yeah, he just emailed me and went, I really love your music, like, do you want to open for me? And I saw you play for Lucy as well, and I went,
oh,
hell yes, I want to open for you. I love a gig. I gobble up every gig that's given to, like, even if it's like the worst gig in the world, it's
You'll
practice.
Do it.
It's
yeah,
like, you don't know who's going to be there. You don't know what opportunity is going to come just from doing it. So it's like, why not do it? I'm free that day. Like, I'll be there.
And any tips for if someone listening to this lands a support act, a support slot, any tips for, like, making the most of that support act opportunity?
So I think I'm gonna plug my single.
Perfect.
But I for your thing, I was like looking at my calendar for the next sort of month and a half, 2 months, and I was thinking, I've got a new track, I've got a new song. How do I tie this in with what else I'm doing, and how do I make the most out of promoting it? And I thought, okay, I've got a really big gig at Ronnie Scott's, which is a jazz club in London, next Tuesday, which I'm playing my band,
Ooh,
which
nice.
I'm buzzing for. I'm so excited for. So I was like, I'll tie that into announcing the release of the song. And then I was like, I'm doing this lovely support gig for Lucy May Walker on the 6th of April in Dalston. And I went, this is a whole new kind of fan base and sort of people that can listen to my music. And if I go and I play a set and people like it, and then I go, by the way, I've got this song that I'm about to play coming out tonight at midnight, then it's like, you know, you're maximizing the opportunity by just kind of just work out how you can kind of tie your own things into what other people are doing and how you can uplift other people by sort of being there for them, and like just loads of stuff. Like, you had your album come out last week. It's like, like, you're not going to sit idly by and not repost the album. Like, yeah. It's like, that's so exciting. And it's
thank
like,
you.
I think you've got to put the work in to kind of, it's you know the saying that's like, gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss. Just girl boss, no gaslighting and no gatekeeping. Uplift others and you'll be uplifted. I'm telling you.
Woo, I have no idea what you just said, but it felt great.
There's like that TikTok thing where everyone goes, gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss.
I never heard of
and
that.
I'm like, and my friends say it all the time. They're always like, gaslight, gatekeep, girl boss. And I'm like, okay. But just don't gatekeep and don't gaslight, just girl boss.
Love it. Amazing. Talking of TikTok, that's so funny. Talking of TikTok, you mentioned about realizing the importance of TikTok in 2021. Talk to me about your TikTok journey.
I have such a love-hate relationship with that app.
Yeah, like, I think we all do.
It's one of those things that it like, especially, like, ask any independent artist. If you're friends with an independent artist, like, my friends are friends with me on TikTok, they hate me. They see my TikToks every single day, just like, no. Because, like, last year, I went through a period of, I basically was being advised I had to post 5 TikToks a day. It was called your 5 a day.
Oh, 5. I thought it was 4. Wow.
So, yeah, so I was being like, it was like 5 a day, and I did from, I think, June to maybe September, the entire summer of last year, I think I was on about 5 TikToks a day. And I look back now and I'm like,
whoa!
What the hell? Like, that is insane. But this was how I went about it, because I made the executive decision in like May last year. I was like, right, this is working for people.
Yeah.
I can do this for myself. I don't need a manager. I don't need a label. I can just do this. And so I basically got rid of my private story on Snapchat and Instagram, because I would just like, you know, any random thought, and like tweeting as well, like any random thought, I just kind of stopped tweeting it, posting up my private story, sending it to my group chats. Instead, I just used TikTok, and I'd have a random thought or something kind of funny to do with my music, and I'd post 5 seconds with just the caption of like, ah ha ha ha, this has happened, I've just had this thought. And those would do really well.
Okay.
And then I had one video. I did a gig last year, and it was like a function gig I was booked for at this rugby club, and it was the weirdest gig in the world. And they paid me £300 once a month for about 3 months to go and play like 45 minute sets, and that bar was always empty every single time. It was just my dad in the room, and I was like, money, ka-ching. Yeah. But I posted this TikTok with my song Pickle Juice in the background before I'd released or anything like that, and I posted videos like, sometimes being a musician is just being paid £300 to play to an empty venue consisting of just your dad.
Yeah. Great.
And it just went, it went mad, and I was like, I just woke up and I went, oh my god, like, what's going on? And then people were like, we want Pickle Juice, release Pickle Juice, we want Pickle Juice. And I was like, oh, I haven't even finished it yet. Like, it's not done.
Nice.
It's not anything. And so, yeah. And then the Pickle Juice videos just started doing really well. And that was the kind of, I think that was the first kind of moment I was like, I can do this for myself. Yeah. I don't need a label. I don't need whatever. Like, I can do this. And the song just did so successfully when it came out, and that hadn't kind of, I'd never been playlisted before, I'd never, you know, anything like that. And when it came out, I was like, wow, I have listeners, I have like a little fan base of people, and it was so nice. It was so rewarding, just from like 5 second video on a silly little app.
So we'll talk about Pickle Juice now. This is a good little,
god, my baby, my favorite.
I noticed with the socials, I don't know if this was, I feel like you probably did do this on purpose. You used the same part of the song, and it was really small clip. Was that, did you do that on purpose? Because I've heard that you should do that.
It really wasn't on purpose, and I don't think I knew that that's what I was supposed to do. It's just that was the audio that did well.
Yeah.
And people were using it and coming back to that audio. And I think I was just like, I never really got round to just uploading another bit of the song.
Oh, okay.
I just, because I was working all the time. I think that's the other thing that I find unbelievable about me posting TikToks constantly, because I was still working in my coffee shop like 4 days a week at that point.
Wow.
And I was just still just like, and I'd just be at work just like TikToking everyone, be like, can you do your job please? And I'd be like, this is my job. There was no kind of thought behind it. And then people kept being like, I want to hear more of the song. And I'd post little kind of side quest videos of just kind of like, oh, this is the second verse. Yeah. Or when I announced it coming out, I rewrote the words of the song to be like, mm-hmm. let me tell you about how this song's coming out a week and a half today. And people were like, oh, this is like a song. But also, I think I was... This is like Pickle Juice is like, that's like my baby. I loved that song from the moment I wrote it, and I knew it was, I sort of knew it was good as well. Like, you know, yeah. when you have a song and you're mm-hmm. just like, do you know what, this is good. And you sometimes do have to have that kind of ego with it,
a little bit. Confidence.
You've got to feel like it's good. And I was so protective over it. And it's also why I didn't release it for ages, because I was like, I don't want people to have it yet. It's mine. It's mine to keep. And I didn't want to kind of give away the song and give away the story of the song. And, you know, it was mine. And like, suddenly all these people wanted in on it, which I'd never had before. And I was like, oh no, like, this is my baby. Don't try and take her away from me. But then I put it out and it was just, oh, it was so great. It was such a great feeling.
Well.
And people listened and so amazing.
Even though the song is called Pickle Juice, it's got nothing to do with pickle juice.
No.
But somehow you landed some sort of endorsement with Branson Pickle. So how did that happen?
Oh my God. This is just, it's just, this still maintains my favourite thing that's ever happened in my music career, because it's so random.
Yeah.
And like, so Pickle Juice began as a joke, because the song was called Pick or Choose, which you can hear when you listen to it. And you're like, that was the other thing when I released it and people went, and I went, yeah, I haven't actually written a song about pickles. And it started as a joke because I posted snippet when I first wrote the song on my Instagram story, and loads of people kept popping up like, pickle juice, pickle juice. And I went, you know, why not? This song's called Pickle Juice now.
Nice.
And because it went on and on and on, and I play it at gigs, and it was like, everyone was like, play pickle juice. And I was like, right, it's called Pickle Juice now. It's funny, it catches people's attention.
That's good.
And then me and my best friend got really drunk on the South Bank at Christmas, like a few years ago. And we ended up at this promotional event for Branston Pickle. And she went up to Joni just went up to this woman and went, my mate Daisy's got this song called Pickle Juice. You guys should sponsor her. And the woman went, okay, whatever. Yeah. Like, and just ignored it. And then we both went, this is something we need to push, because I think it will be hilarious.
Yeah.
And so for months, I'm talking months, I was tweeting Branston Pickle. I was making TikToks at Branston Pickle. I was like, Branston Pickle. And then I was getting my friends to do it. And then I was getting my listeners to do it. And they must have hated me. Like, honestly, it was annoying. And then I was out for lunch one day and I got an email. Not an email. I got a tweet from them being like, get 100 likes on this tweet. Let's get talking. And the tweet in like a few hours got like 200 plus likes.
Nice.
Which was just like it. And so yeah, and then I got talking and they sent me a load of lovely free pickle juice pickle. So I've got loads of Branston Pickle. I know, that is my favorite thing that's ever happened as part of my music
career. I love
that.
And it's just organic. You didn't even write a song about pickle. It was an organic thing,
just became
that's
I just
amazing.
Thought it'd be funny. I really did just think it would be funny. And it's so good at gigs now when I go, I sort of introduce the song and I go, oh, the joke went on for so long that this song's now endorsed by Branston Pickle. And people are like, what?
Do you like pickle, by the way?
I do really
like Branston.
I hate
pickle.
Do you know, when I first wrote the song, didn't like Branston Pickle. Oh. Now, I love it. I have it on everything. I really do have it on everything now. And that's not even a lie. That's not even because Branston has like a hold on me. Like, yeah. I genuinely do love Branston Pickle now.
Aww.
It's grown on me so much.
It's beautiful.
I love it.
Love and story.
I know. And they were, the people at Branston were so lovely as well, and like, they heard the song before anyone else, and like, you know, they were really great.
That's
it was
awesome.
Really nice.
So you released Pickle Juice with the distributor DistroKid, right?
Yeah.
So how's the process with them, if you don't mind talking about? I love talking about different distributors.
Yeah, I've never really used a different distributor. I was using SpinUp for a bit, but just because I had like a free promotional thing from when they came into our college at one point and spoke to us, and they, like, I'm not gonna lie, they're not even a company anymore. I can say this. They were terrible. Right. Terrible. Mm-hmm. Awful. And like, I did get added to SpinUp's playlists and stuff like that, but I was just like, I was so disappointed in the distribution. And then it was just not good.
What was something that was, but like, were they doing things wrong, or were they?
There wasn't like accessibility to like a pre-save link. There wasn't any way of kind, like, when the song came out, there wasn't even like a kind of like, you could get a link and then be like, here is it on all platforms.
Oh, you have to make
it was
them.
Like, you had to go mm-hmm. through, and it just, I was like, this is not cool. This is really annoying. And then when I moved to DistroKid, because also I did have a whole debacle where I changed my artist name. So I was like, I had this whole kind of like, oh, I'm just Daisy, because I was really insecure about my second name.
Oh,
and then
it's
I went,
so
do you know
good.
What? This I know. And then I went, this is stupid. I love my second name. And then I became Daisy Vcock, and I moved all of my work onto Daisy Vcock. And DistroKid, they've just always been like easy. They have a good pre-save platform, and like them, they're probably not a distributor you'll use forever if you're kind of continuing with like a label or management or anything like that. Like, you'll probably move on to something like AWOL, which is kind of more developed and more kind of, you know, it's sort of got that, it's got more kind of backing to it. But DistroKid, as an independent artist and a free distribution site, mm-hmm. does the job, man, and it's easy.
Great.
Does the job, and it's easy. And do you know what? I don't have a bad word to say about DistroKid. Love them.
Love. Oh, that's really refreshing to hear. Cannot say the same for anyone that I've worked with. Whoops. You landed New Music Friday.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So was that through? Did you pitch yourself to Spotify?
I did pitch myself. I mean, I wish I could be like, this is how I get New Music Friday, because every release you're like, I want New Music Friday. Yeah. That's the playlist everyone wants when they're releasing. And I'd never landed New Music Friday before, and Bo and our friend James released this song called Cruising a week before Pickle Juice came out.
Yeah.
And they landed New Music Friday, and I was really cross about it, because I was like, how have they landed New Music Friday and I've never landed New Music Friday? And then a week later, Pickle Juice came out and it was on New Music Friday, and I went, okay, fine, whatever.
Oh, amazing. And you don't know how it happened?
No, I think weird, like, pre-saves are a big thing, I think.
Yes.
See, I don't really know, but I really try and push pre-saves now. And I think Pickle Juice got maybe, by the end, just before the song came out, it was about 100 pre-saves.
Okay. See,
which is
right. It's good, especially for, you know, if you're kind of starting out, not that you're brand new, but it's weird because I've heard you need to, pre-saves are a thing now that you need, like, I don't know, 10,000 pre-saves to make a difference. So,
but no one pre-saves. It's really weird. It's
true.
Just like, and I was, because everyone's like, oh, it's all about pre-saves, but I'm like, my song wasn't pre-saved that many times. Like, I didn't have like big enough fan base for it to be pre-saved that many times. But I think, you know, also I think it's a big thing with like creating a stir around the song, or the album, or the whatever you're releasing, weeks and months before the song comes out, because if it's got a load of clout before it's even been released, mm-hmm. it's like that May Stevens, that song, you know, that If We Ever Broke Up, that was like a hit before it even came out. Like, that was just like, people, like, I could tell you every word of that chorus months before that song came out. And like, if there's a stir around the song, you know, Spotify's going to be like, hello. And also, when you pitch it, you put that in the pitch.
That's what I was just about to say. What kind of, do you remember what kind of thing you said in the pitch?
I think I was like, oh, I've got this many views on TikTok, Branston Pickle.
Great, yeah.
Kind of stuff about live shows and being like, oh, it was a big favourite at like live shows. And also, I think a big thing as well is like telling Spotify how you're planning to promote it in the run up to like the actual release. So for the release that is coming out for me next Friday is, I know, I'm so excited. I'm really excited about this one, because it's proper sad kind of, like, it's a bit bit sort of more personal, but for this one, the way I've pitched it to Spotify is I'm running a giveaway. So if you go and pre-save my song, you can win a lovely little hat that I've crocheted, and you can enter into a competition to win the hat. And also you can get, I haven't actually received these yet. They haven't arrived yet, so I'm hoping they arrive in time for the release.
Okay.
But for Pickle Juice, I designed some special stickers.
Yes, they're so cool.
Which were limited edition to Pickle Juice the song. So I've only ordered like a batch for each song. And for this one, because there is a line in the song, which is the most kind of prolific line in the song, it says, a book you'd save for a rainy afternoon. They're little books that save for a rainy afternoon on the front.
That's beautiful.
So you can get a sticker. You can get a sticker with, yeah. And, you know, just telling Spotify that that's, you've got all these things and sort of different ways of kind of how the song will be promoted.
Yeah.
They like that. They
you
like
really
that.
Thought about it. And it also, that's a good tip as well to get people, give people an incentive to pre-save. So that seemed to work.
Give them a reason.
That seemed to work for me as well when I did my album, when I was like, what did I do? Oh, yeah. It was pre-save. Send me a screenshot of you pre-saving my album and I'll voice note you a secret. And that then I just literally, I mean, it was so easy for me. I just send them a little voice note back saying, hey, so my big secret is, and then I just told them about my next single before I announced it, which
is, that's so cool.
You know, really
and you did those
simple.
lovely lyric posts as well. I was really enjoying them.
Oh,
5 days,
really?
It was like 5 day countdown and I was like,
did
oh
that work?
And each one I really liked
okay.
them. I was like, I saw them every day and I was like, oh, these are so lovely, and like all the little pictures and stuff.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that it was really difficult for me to kind of work out what to get people excited, because like 2 weeks before I suddenly had this moment where I was like, oh my god, I've been working for like 4 years up to this moment, and how do I, like, what if people don't even care? And then I was like, right, you need to get people excited.
That's the problem. It's like, you're constantly like, no one cares. And it's like, make them,
right.
Make them, force them, bully them into caring. It's nice. Just like, you got to poke people constantly. And it might be annoying and a little bit much sometimes, but you do have to kind of, you have to physically give people reason to kind of do it. And
yeah.
You've got to be like, pre-save, listen to my songs. And they're like, okay. And eventually they will, you know.
Every episode, I feel like it's me asking the other person, like, how did you get people to pre-save?
No, pre-saves is like, because even I, like, someone's like, pre-save, and I'm like, oh, yeah. I don't want to pre-save. Because it's like, you have to open the link, because sometimes you have to log into your Spotify, and you're like, oh, my God. But it's so helpful, to, especially independence, man. Like, please, if you are see us asking you to pre-save, please.
Pre-save Daze's new single. Hey.
Yes, do that for a rainy afternoon.
Just
April 7th.
There we go. I forgot to ask this question. All of your songs have like really high numbers on Spotify, and I notice it's on loads of third-party playlists. Was that through, do you think, algorithms, through being on editorial playlists?
I think...
Or?
Definitely algorithms through editorials, because oh my god, like the last one when it was added to kind of like, because it wasn't just New Music Friday UK, the last one, it was like the New Music Friday and then Egypt and India.
I saw that.
I was like,
random.
Okay, I was like, hella fans in Egypt and India now, so big up my Indian and Egyptian fans, love you all, which was quite strange, but also why not.
Yeah.
And so that really pushed it. But third-party playlists, I mean, like, I'm a strong believer in, like, not paying for playlist placements.
Yeah.
I really, like, I've never, like, because people will message you on Instagram being like, pay £100 and feature on my playlist. And you're like, yeah, I feel really kind of irritated when I see them, because I feel like it's, like, it's these scams that prey on the desperation of independent artists.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of, like, it's just... Because also it's like you see it and you're like, oh man, this would actually be really helpful. But you know what? If you put the work in and you know you're good, you're going to be picked up anyway. And my first kind of like big kind of draw to my Spotify, this is quite a funny story and also so random, because I've never had any kind of knowledge as to why this has happened.
Okay.
But when I put It Wouldn't Be Fair out so long ago, 2020, and in sort of... January of 2022, Tom Felton, who's the actor that plays Draco Malfoy
yes.
in Harry Potter, reposted my song to his story, no context, no message being like, this song. And I never got like a message from him or anything like that. I was never, and so for the first like half of 2021, that song did really well, just out of nowhere. It hadn't ever featured on Spotify playlists or anything like that. And all of my listeners were like Harry Potter fans.
Great.
And all of them were like, they were being added to kind of like Hogwarts playlist number 7 and amazing stuff like that. And it was just like, you know, it's stuff like that. And just, and also kind of contacting blogs and student radio stations, man. They have a lot more kind of, a lot more power than you'd think they do, because students are the people that are listening, you know.
Interesting. Okay, cool. So you have your single coming out. You're supporting Meek. You're supporting Gekko.
Yes.
What's the rest of the year looking like for Daisy V-Cup?
Oh, man. This is another example
okay?
of like...
You seem stressed.
This is another example of I'm like... this is another independent artist blagging it a little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's plans in place. There's another single that's been finished, which is very sexy and very kind of it's very saucy. It's kind of bossa novery, which we're doing a video for, which I've never done a music video, which is scary and exciting. I have written an EP. There is another EP, but I'm gonna debut the name of this on here because people haven't really heard this before. I've written an EP that's called A Drunk Thought from a Night Bus in November.
Love that title.
But I really limited myself, and me and my producers keep like laughing about this because we can only really release it in November. And so each year that comes around, I'm like, oh, like, it's got to be this November. And he's like, it's not ready. And I'm like, it's got to be this November. But also, you know, releasing another EP is so, so big to me. Yeah. And like the last one took years. Mm-hmm. It took ages. And like things keep chopping and changing. And it's sort of like how I want to release the EP, because some people release it like they release 3 songs and then there's 2 more. Whereas mm-hmm. I'd want to do it like I release 1 song and then it's the whole new collection of kind of music for
right,
people,
yeah.
Which I love in an EP.
Okay.
And I'm a big old kind of like storyteller, so I'm like, every song has to represent this exact feeling and everyone has to feel like this in this song, and it like goes through and it's like everyone has to understand the relationships and the struggles I was going through and like all of this. And I'm just a massive drama queen.
Aren't we all? I think all songwriters are, don't worry.
So, you know, there might be an EP, but I think that might be pushed off to next year. But hey, there is an EP that has been written.
That's exciting.
There is one.
Keep them guessing, yes. Daisy. Keep them guessing.
I know. Who knows? You might get an EP. You might not get an EP. Yay. Who knows?
Oh,
who
amazing. Knows? Well, I'm really looking forward to having you support me.
I'm so
week.
Excited. I really am so excited. It's going to be so fun.
Everyone, make sure you do follow Daisy. And I'm going to end on this last question that I ask every guest. Have you prepared an answer for me?
I have, but you've told me not to swear, and like this is normally just like a one liner that
okay.
is always repeated.
Daisy V-Cup, what is your music industry secret?
Okay, this is my music industry secret, which every music industry professional will tell you. Don't be a telling you. Like, everyone is gonna choose a lovely, lovely bass player guitarist over the egotistical, narcissistic, annoying one that can't arrive anywhere on time.
Thank
and
you.
Like, just don't be a d-. People will like you if you're not a d-, telling you.
Yeah. But the thing is, some people are just d-. Do you know what
I
mean? Know.
And they can't help it.
Yeah.
And they can't help
well,
it.
They
but
should.
It's just try and be as lovely as you can and support people and show up and put the work in, man. Put the work in and show up and support your artists and put back into your community, because it will come round to you, because karma will come back round.
I'm a big believer in karma. Oh, that's amazing. That is a great secret. Thank you so much for coming on and telling us.
Hopefully that will help.
Yay.
Thanks for having me. I've had a great time.
Spill. Oh, thank thank you so much for listening to that episode of Music Industry Secrets Spilled. As we mentioned on the pod, you can see us both alongside Nat Suma at my headline show at the Victoria in Dalston, London on Thursday the 6th of April. There are a few tickets left for those who haven't got one yet. So head to my website, lucymaywalkerofficial.com, click on the live link. And yeah, we'd love to see you there. Until then, love you, bye!
Music industry secrets. Music industry secrets. Music industry secrets.